Hello, my friends. There is something going on behind the scenes that I don't know if you're aware of it. I was not aware of it, but there are services being provided to those with special needs, intellectual or physical disabilities that are being provided across the state every single day, from housing to day trips, to education, all kinds of things that really offer quality of life to people in these situations. Now, these programs are funded by the state, but they are for-profit companies that are actually providing these services. And in the midst of a hiring crisis and the incredible inflation that we're seeing, these service providers are struggling. And so I wanted you to hear a little bit about their story, about what they provide, how important their services are, and I wanted to make you aware that they cannot continue to move forward unless they get additional funding from the state government. And I am a big fan of these services. I've seen them in action, and I want to make sure that we can move forward. So what I'm going to ask you to do is listen to these individuals, and then contact your state legislator and let them know that you are in support of these services. So we'll start out with Chris Larson. Chris Larson is a good friend of mine. He is a great friend of this show. He is also with Ember Services. Ember Services provides day trips to these people that have these needs. And it is a game-changing service. I just wish you could all go on some of these day trips and see what an impact they are making. But Ember Services is facing this crisis. All right, Chris, it's a real pleasure having you on the show today. First of all, tell our listeners about your services, Ember Services, and what you do.
Yeah, so we're a disability support provider. We do day program supports. So we serve primarily adults with the intellectual disabilities, with autism, after they get done with the school system. These families have a lot of support in place with the school system. In Utah, they get support until they're 22. But after that, all the support kind of drops off for families. So that's where if families are lucky enough to get approved for funding and services and get off the state waiting list for the Medicaid waiver, we're able to come in and support these people during the day. So we pick them up from home so their parents can continue to work, and we take them to do fun, meaningful activities in the community.
Well, and I've had the opportunity to witness what you guys do firsthand, and what comes to my mind more than anything is just quality of life. This is a game changer for those people that you serve.
Right. Yeah, I think we operate on a little bit different model. Historically, people with disabilities were institutionalized, and there's been a lot of transformation with really making sure that people with disabilities have a place in the community and belong, just like you or I do. So we don't use a warehouse model. We don't have them, you know, sit inside and color. We don't have them do piecework. We really have them do things like they get to go volunteer in real places and make a difference. They get to go do fun things like movies and bowling. They also take classes, and we partner with libraries. We do physical things with rec centers like swimming and adaptive sport programs. So all day they get to do things that they choose, that they want to do, and that are really meaningful for them. So,
And I think from what I've experienced, it changes them when they have an opportunity to choose for themselves. A lot of the behaviors that would normally be displayed go away once they have choice and they're doing things they enjoy and things like that.
Right. Definitely. I think, you know, I've been in this field for 16 years, and as the models progress and as we're able to get more and more people into the community doing what they like, I find that, you know, before where people might be physically aggressive or really depressed, a lot of those behaviors of aggression or, you know, sadness kind of fade away because they're participating, they're self-directing their lives, they're doing what they really want to be doing.
Yeah, I wish everybody could witness it firsthand so that they could see the difference that you're making every single day. The interesting thing is that, though, that you receive your funding from the government. and we're in the middle of a hiring crisis. And what most businesses are doing is they're finding ways to raise their wages, and they're going to pass those costs on to the consumer, right? That's why we're seeing so much inflation. You can't pass your costs off to the consumers because the government decides how much you get no matter what.
Right. So yeah, our funding is through a Medicaid waiver. It's managed by the Division of Services for People with Disabilities under the Department of Human Services here in Utah. So basically what it is the state pits up about 30% of our funding, and Medicaid matches that with the additional 70%. So whatever Utah wants to pit up there for our rates, they get to decide it. The federal government matches it. That's how we get paid. So it's really up to, you know, the Department of Human Services, up to the governor, and up to state legislators to make sure that we have the funding in place. Because yeah, we're not selling burgers. We can't raise the price of a sandwich. You know, we can't do those things. We also can't adjust our hours. You know, we can't limit what we serve because, you know, we do day program supports, but providers all over the state do a lot of residential supports. So when people can't live at home anymore, they need that 24-hour care for medical needs or behavioral needs or supervision. So when people, we can't just be like, oh, we're only going to let people live 18 hours a day instead of 24 hours a day, you know, or so where fast food places might discontinue their breakfast service, we can't change our hours or change our prices. So we're kind of limited in the ways we can compete in both of those ways.
And so the only way you can get any additional revenue is if the state legislature comes together? Are they the ones who decide what type of funding you get?
Yeah. So the process is, you know, the Department of Human Services makes recommendations to the governor. The governor pits out his proposed budget, which always changes. The legislature really owns that process and working it out and the final product. So the governor has made his recommendation. He's recommended a 1.5% increase for us, which raises wages about 30 cents. Just in comparison to what we're able to pay right now, because there's no regular increases built into the system, the average provider starts at $11.75 an hour right now across the state. And with McDonald's and all these other fast food places starting at $15, $16, $17 an hour, every day I hear more stories of places even starting at $18, $18.50 an hour. I think Hobby Lobby is starting at $18.50 an hour to go do retail, you know? Mm-hmm. So when that, you know, and there was some temporary funds that we were able to get through the American Rescue Act. So, you know, that may bring us up to 13 total with everything that's happening, which is for the work that our staff do for keeping people safe, keeping people happy, taking care of their medical needs, to be paid sometimes $5 less an hour than retail. That 30 cents doesn't put a dent into it.
So how is it affecting Ember Services, and how is it affecting the other service providers in the state?
Yeah. So I think, you know, I've been doing this for a long time, and I've never seen it this bad. We've had to completely stop taking new individuals that need services. We've had to really evaluate how we do things. We've unfortunately had to make administrative cuts. So really key leadership positions in our company had to go. And we're small. We're one of the smaller providers in the state. We only serve 40 people, where larger providers are serving hundreds and hundreds of people in much more intense settings than we are. So we have a little bit more flexibility, but these other providers, right now across the state, there's a 20% vacancy rate. So approximately 1 in 5 staff are missing. So that leads to burnout with staff. That leads to sometimes, you know, potential for health and safety risk. We need to have the appropriate staff to keep people safe where they're at. And then it also makes it really hard, because I was just talking to two providers, between the two providers, over 200 people living in group homes or other residential settings have had to move out of their home into a different residential setting just so that they can maximize their staffing and keep people safe. So 200 people having to move over this issue already. And it's just getting worse every day.
Well, and again, there's nothing you can do. You can either cut your costs, right? Mm-hmm. Or cut services that you provide. I'm curious, right now we're in a hiring crisis and there's no way for you guys to quickly react to that without the legislature. Is there any talk of some, you know, responding to some kind of metric? I don't know what it would be to where each year you get some type of increase to correspond with inflation? Or do you literally have to go back to the legislature every single year, make your case again, and start the process from scratch?
Currently, that's the way we have to do it. And over the last 10 years, we did get, you know, we were paying like minimum wage to $8 an hour for quite a while. And we were able to get over a plan that was supposed to be 3 years, turned into a 7-year plan. We were able to get an increase to bring staff to this $11.75 an hour increase. And that's the only increase we've had in over a decade. And with that, there was no adjustment for admin costs. There was no adjustment for the raise in prices of buildings or administrative staff or anything else. So part of the crisis, what makes it so bad right now, is that there haven't been increases for most of how we run business and just a small amount for staffing. And just to get that done took literally years to get that increase to happen. So
yeah, it's amazing. What's I think important to note is that we're looking at a budget surplus in the state of mm-hmm. Utah. So we're not talking about taking money from anybody else. It's just a matter of what is the state of Utah going to do with this extra money? And I know they want to give a portion back to the taxpayer, and taxpayers love mm-hmm. that. It is your message, hey, don't give as much back, or how are you approaching this with the state legislature?
Yeah, I think there's a few things. One of the big things that we're having conversations around is Amendment G that passed that freed the legislature to use income tax dollars in wider ways than they've been able to before. It was solely directed towards education. When they were pushing this amendment, they used the disability community mm-hmm. as a group that would be helped by this increased ability to have flexibility with their funding. So one of the things we're saying is, yeah, we'd like for this funding that you talked about being available to help with this crisis. So I think that's kind of the first area that we're asking for help. And I think, you know, there's a lot of things to consider. You know, Utah's covering 30% of the bill. The federal government's bringing in 70%. What's happening is if we're bringing our staff up to this $17, $18 an hour wage, they're going to rely less on social programs. They're going to be contributing more themselves in income tax and taking less. The reason that these waivers make sense is because it really helps states. The money just is pouring right back into the state. Mm-hmm. So ideally, you know, we're helping the economy by increasing these wages. We're really serving people, and it's going to hopefully in the long run add to even more surplus in our economy.
What can our listeners do? I know you want to share this message so that everybody is aware of what's going on. I'll be honest, until I met you, Chris, I didn't even know these services were being provided. I have an autistic sister, and I would have liked to have known that these services are being provided, and I didn't know how they were paid for. Mm-hmm. But you and I have had a chance. I've been at your day programs. I've seen the incredible impact. I wish every legislator could just spend a day with you and see the positive, incredible work that's going on. What would you like? What can our listeners do to help you in this process?
Yeah, I think, you know, one thing that if you want to learn more, we've created a website just for this issue. It's called crisisofcare.com. It shares stories of real families that receive these services and staff that are struggling and trying to make the decision of, do they pay their bills or do they continue to help people so they can live in the community?
Yeah.
So crisisofcare.com is a great place to go and learn more. And I think, you know, legislators need to hear that this is an issue for people. The governor's office, you know, obviously hasn't heard enough that this is an issue, or I think they would have made it a bigger priority in the budget. So contacting the governor, contacting legislators, and letting them know that we just need adequate funding to compete. every small business and large business in Utah is struggling with the staffing crisis. We're not asking for an unfair advantage. We're not asking to be prioritized amongst everybody else. We're just asking that our rates be adjusted so that we can compete with retail and fast food even, which I think our people we support deserve much more than that. But at this point, even if we could compete with that, it would give us a fighting chance.
So if somebody's going to contact the governor's office or their legislature, what language should they use so that they know it's specific to the services you provide?
Yeah. So again, our funding source comes from the Division of Services for People with Disabilities, the acronym that everyone knows, through the governor's office and the legislators, DSPD. DSPD. Okay. So if I was to write my legislator, I might just say, please support funding to increase wages for DSPD staff so that they can continue to serve people and people with disabilities can have the same rights and access to the community that everyone else has.
Perfect. Perfect. I'll let everybody know I'm such a huge fan, and I'm so glad, Chris, that you introduced me to what you do every single day. And, you know, I think as, you know, we tend, if we're on the right side of the aisle, to shy away from government programs because we've been trained that they're all bad. And I keep trying to tell people, no, it's not about whether or not it's a government program. It's about whether or not it's effective. And, right. And I think you made a great point that I believe that this type of services saves tax dollars, because otherwise you're spending tax dollars reactively. And mm-hmm. reactive spending of tax dollars is a terrible way to go. You know, your services are literally helping people become self-sufficient and contributing members to this society. That's always better than writing a check on the back end.
Yeah. And there's like employment first directives that we have. So one of the things that we do with every single person in all of services every year is say, how do we get these people working in the community at, you know, competitive wages so that they rely less on, you know, federal and state dollars. It's definitely something that we want people to rely on services less, contribute more to society, and to be able to live meaningful and happy lives. So yeah. For sure.
Yeah, I love that. Meaningful and happy lives. Chris, thank you so much. Again, I'm going to post the information that we talked about in the description so everybody can see it. Anything else that you would like to share?
No, thanks so much for talking about this. And thanks to all your listeners.
I also want to introduce you to Nathan Krippis. He's the Public Affairs Supervising Attorney at the Disability Law Center. And get some more feedback from him on what it's going to take to be able to get additional funding to these service providers so that these people who are relying on these programs continue to get these incredible services. And I also want to know if there's anything that can be done so they don't have to rush back to the legislature every single time there is a hiring crisis or some type of inflation or supply chain issues. All right, Nathan, it's such a pleasure to have you on. I'm really excited to provide people with some information about home and community-based services in our communities here in the state of Utah. I'll be honest with you, I wasn't even aware of this service. I didn't know what was going on, and I have an autistic sister, believe it or not. And so I was really excited to get to know these programs, and over the past year, I've become intimately familiar with what these providers do and the importance of what they do. But take a minute before we talk about the hiring crisis and how it's affecting these service providers. What do home and community-based service providers do? What is their value in our community?
I mean, their value is tremendous. I think, you know, for us, and just to give a little background. So the Disability Law Center is, again, the state's protection and advocacy agency. And what we do is we seek to protect and advance the rights of Utahns with disabilities. And, you know, one of the ways we do that, obviously people are familiar with the Americans with Disabilities Act. You know, that's a law out there to protect the rights of people with disabilities. But there's a provision in there that is what we would call the integration mandate. And it says that people with disabilities have the right to, you know, be integrated in the community, to live and be, you know, kind of in the community and live, work, and play, as we might say. And
there was also a case by the Supreme Court called Olmstead v. LC that kind of essentially said that people have the right to, you know, live in community-based settings as opposed to more institutional settings. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's any secret that over the years, people with disabilities often ended up in more institutional facilities and kind of were otherwise segregated from the community. You know, out of, they kind of just, that's where they went for a large portion of our history. And I think the big thing is the ADA and the Supreme Court have said, no, people have to, you know, people with disabilities have the right to live in the community. And so there's been this effort over the last, I mean, many decades, but really to try and increase these HCBS providers, these home and community-based services providers, so that people with disabilities don't have to be in institutions, that they can be provided, you know, housing and other services and supports in the community, and do that. And so, you know, it really is, you know, a huge value to the community to have these providers out there. You know, it's I think the state has to, as a matter of law, I mean, to have these providers to make sure that people aren't being forced into institutions. But just as a general matter, I think for people with disabilities, you know, I don't think most people want to segregate or isolate folks in a place where we don't have, you know, that integration and inclusion.
You have sent a letter to the governor and to leadership in the House and the state Senate. And you do have an ask. What are you asking that they do with some of these surplus dollars?
So we are asking that they, I believe the letter we sent asked for, I'd have to look back. I think it was around $40 million. Maybe if you want to quote me on that.
That's the number that I remember. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Good. Well, then if you remember that, I'll say that's what we said.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it you know, to increase provider rates, I think that would take it up for providers to be able to pay staff around $18 an hour. You know, ultimately, I think, you know, the legislature, you know, I understand they have a lot of people asking. Again, like I said, this is a system-wide thing. It's not just the HCBS providers. You know, there are mental health providers. There are, you know, nursing facilities that provide services as well that I think are having these staffing issues that probably need higher rates. So I think there's going to be a lot of kind of folks asking for an increase. And so I recognize that. I think what we're saying to legislatures, you know, that's the number we think would really kind of move things in the right direction. But at the end of the day, we're willing to have a conversation. You know, I think if anything we can do to increase those rates, I think is going to help retain and recruit staff. But I think there's also, you know, one of the other things we mentioned is there's a program called Caregiver Compensation, which allows families to kind of get some of that funding to help provide the services. So a family member who has an individual living with them may be providing them services, you know, while they're there, and they can actually be paid for that through these funds. We had concern when we sent the letter that program was ending at the end of the year. Thankfully, we've recently heard that program is actually going to be continued through, I believe, this fiscal year, which I think will be through June. And we're hoping the legislature will also look at increased funding for that. You know, there's a limited supports waiver that provides a little bit of maybe a reduced service to folks than the community supports waiver. And we're saying, hey, maybe put some funding into that too, to provide services to folks to try and help some of this. You know, I think what we're saying is, you know, yes, the funding needs to be increased. I don't think you can address this without getting more staff for the HCBS providers. But we're willing to get creative and think about ways to, you know, to do this. We've reached out to the governor. We reached out to the legislative leadership, but we've also sent this letter to staff at or agencies at, you know, like heads of agencies, the Department of Health and Human Services, to say to them, you know, we want to have a conversation, and, you know, we're trying to initiate some discussions with them. You know, I know the governor's budget did have a slight increase in it. So that's a starting place. I don't think it was where we wanted it to be.
Yeah.
But I think we're hopeful that we can work with the agencies, the governor, legislative folks to really see what we can do to address this problem.
So I want to take a minute and thank Chris and Nathan for joining us today. I hope you get some sense of what's going on behind the scenes. I'll be honest, until I met Chris, I had no idea that these services were being provided. Once I got to witness them firsthand, I became such a fan, and it helped me understand that this particular state and federal partnership for this type of funding is so critical. And these companies who provide these services are in a crisis right now. Unlike other companies, they can't just raise their fees and pass the costs on to the consumer. They have to ask for more money from the state. Good news is there's a state surplus right now. So this means that if you contact your state legislator, then there is a chance that some of that additional extra funding can go to these service providers. So I hope you'll take a minute to do that. There'll be a link in the description for you to be able to do that. And please take a minute. This is something I really believe in, and I know it can make a difference. So help us, please, with your support. And with that, thank you once again for joining us on another edition of the JMAC Podcast.